Tonight, as you, if you use that YouVersion Bible app, I know not everybody does, and I'm not going to say this every week. I just want to remind you, if you do use it, it is a great tool that you can use to follow along with the sermon. And it's got built-in notes, so you can take notes right in there. You can email it to yourself. You can save it as a note, whatever. You just find it by looking in the menu there, look to live, search for a live event. Should pop up right away. When God disappoints, that's what we're talking about tonight. That's tonight. And if it doesn't pop up right away, you can put in the zip code for Crown Point Church, and it's 64064. And then you can, like I said, put your own notes in there. You can email it to yourself. There is a question in there. You can answer the question at any time. You don't have to wait till the end, which is where the question is. But when you get there, you can just answer that question. We started last week talking about disappointment and how we have expectations. And a lot of times in life, our expectations are not met. And of course, that's true in a lot of areas of life. It can be anything. Last week, we kind of talked about more about when people disappoint us. Tonight, we're going to talk about when God disappoints us. And I know that might sound like sacrilege to some of you. And I apologize. That is just the fact of how it feels sometimes. Last week, we talked about how if you can't expect what you don't express to people, and a lot of times our disappointment comes when we've expected things, but we haven't even told people what we expect, so they don't even know. I also talked about how sometimes we have a dysfunction junction where we ourselves are the issue, but we kind of project that onto other people, or we expect other people to be as dysfunctional as we are, where we might be out of balance and working so hard in a certain area, or it might even be a good thing where you are so passionate about a certain ministry and you feel like if other people are not as passionate, then they're not as Christian. Have you ever known anybody like that? Oh, I have. I have. And it's awesome because you want to see people passionate about ministry, but we all can't be passionate about the same things. God didn't wire us that way. He didn't set the church up that way. He intended for us to have a variety of passions so that more needs would be met. I also talked about the fact that there are godly expectations, and then sometimes we don't know what those are, and we're confused about what those are, and then there's times where God actually puts interruptions into our lives that he intends to be there, but for us, they kind of look like interruptions and problems, and they're not meant to be problems. So let's talk tonight about when God disappoints, and I'm sure that you have experienced this like I have, where there's things where you may be doing something in your life or walking a certain way and things aren't happening the way you think. And you think, God, what's going on? Why aren't you meeting these needs? Or why aren't you showing up in this? And there's times where you may feel like you even hesitate to voice that, or maybe you don't even want to say it out loud because it may not seem very Christian to do that. But as we talk about this tonight, I just want to encourage you the fact that if you look at the book of Psalms and you read through there, David complained to God a lot. A lot. In fact, there's a lot of Psalms, I look at them and I think, man, these do not sound very spiritual at all. Especially when he's saying, God, why won't you kill my enemies? I mean, he's literally asking God to do damage to other people. That just doesn't seem very right to me, but he does it. And the fact is that we do experience disappointments, and they come a lot in a lot of forms. Tonight, we're going to continue talking about Mary, Martha, and Lazarus. And I remember last week we talked about, I was going to talk about them a couple times and some of the stories that are involved in their life. This particular story comes out of the book of John, and it starts in verse number 11. And it's a story, it's very familiar to you, but hopefully what we're going to talk about tonight, maybe it isn't something that you've thought of tonight in that story, because we're not going to actually talk about kind of the main point of the story. We're going to talk about the disappointment that comes along in the story, and we're going to look at specifically some of the disappointment that they expressed to Jesus in the middle of that. So a man named Lazarus was sick. I love how John does this. You know, John is the author. He's one of the disciples. And in his book, the book of John, he never names himself as the author. What he does is through the book, he refers to himself. How many of you know what he refers to himself as? I hear kind of. The disciple whom Jesus loved, which is so comical to me because you know the other disciples read this book. And they had to be thinking like, oh, whatever, John. He liked us all, or we loved us all. But John was in the inner circle. You hear so much about Peter, James, and John. Those three were with him when he was transfigured. Those three he called to the further point of prayer when he was in the garden before he was crucified. He was in the inner circle. But it is comical to me that he says this. But look how he describes Lazarus. And what's funny here, you got to think of him as an author. He's telling a story. And in this story, more than others that I've read of his, he is creating a sense of expectation. Look what he does. He says, a man named Lazarus was sick. What does Jesus do with sick people? He heals them. So he says, he lived in Bethany with his sisters, Mary and Martha. Then he does a little bit of foretelling, actually, because what he mentions here happens later in his book, which is comical because some people say, well, that's obvious. He couldn't have, you know, the Bible can't be inspired because there's these kind of mistakes in there. And I look at him and just laugh. You've got to be kidding. You're talking about somebody who is a fisherman who's writing a book. Of course he's going to have things like this. So he tells you about something he's going to write about later, and he says, this is the Mary who later poured the expensive perfume on the Lord's feet and wiped them with her hair. So some people have said, why did he say that if he was just going to tell the story later? Well, he says it because he's creating a sense of expectation. He's trying to tell you this isn't any old Mary. This is a Mary that had a special relationship with Jesus. So then he goes, her brother Lazarus was sick. Some people would say, he already said that. Yes, he did, but he's telling a story. So the two sisters sent a message to Jesus telling him, Lord, your dear friend is very sick. I think it's so funny because they didn't say, Lazarus, your dear friend is sick. They just said, dear friend, and expected he would know which friend that Jesus, that they were talking about. And what John, the author, is doing here is he's setting us up. He's setting us up to be very disappointed in what Jesus does. And he's showing you how disappointed Mary and Martha are, and they have good reason to be. Because when Jesus heard about it, he said to his disciples, I'm sure, Lazarus's sickness will not end in death. No, it happened for the glory of God, so that the Son of God will receive glory from this. I look at this and I think, Mary and Martha, they felt like they had connections. You know how that works, right? When you got a guy or you know somebody and you expect special treatment because either you've done something for them or they've been there for you or you mowed their lawn so that, you know. And you have friends like that, right? I mean, you know somebody that if you needed something in the middle of the night, who would you call? Somebody, right? There's somebody you would call. Either you have a special relationship with them or you've done something for them, or you expect that they would come through for you, somebody you know like that. Well, that's how they felt about Jesus. And they had good reason to feel that. They had good reason because, remember last week, we talked about how Martha made him dinner. They were special. It wasn't like just an average person. The reason they were going to be so disappointed is Jesus healed strangers all the time. Don't you think that they could have expected at least the same measure of treatment that he gave to just common people, to his friends? He ate in their home. He stayed in their home. Okay, society in America has changed a lot in the last, let's just say, 20 years. Because I remember as a kid growing up in church, you spent time in people's homes all the time. That was common. It doesn't happen anymore. I mean, studies show that, but you could tell me that. And I'm not trying to make anybody feel bad because I realize to have someone come over to the house means you clean extra. I get that. I know that. I know what that means. And for whatever reason, we don't as a society do that very often anymore. But there's something different about it when you have somebody in your home. You get to know them on a whole different level. I will never forget. Remember Nicole when Brother Derek and Bridget came over the first time these people from Sheffield came over and we're talking and the wife and we're all talking or whatever. We're like, where's Derek? And we look over and he had curled up with a blanket on our couch and passed out, just took a nap. I'm like, okay, you're at home. You know what? We're okay with that. But because of that comfort level you establish when you're in someone's home is different. Let me just say, I think it's worth the effort, but it is effort. I know that. And you're cooking and then you got to clean the dish. I know. But it's worth it. But these people had that with Jesus, and he didn't rush to their side. Jesus healed other people. He healed people that he didn't even know. We see this little window into Jesus's ministry at different times. It appears as if he had different people who helped support the ministry. We know that Judas kept the treasury. We know that there's different women who traveled, and they probably paid money to help them live because they didn't have jobs at that time. They had to somehow eat, and travel and stay. And some scholars think that maybe Mary and Martha, because remember last week we talked about how it was her house. Some scholars wonder if she may have been a woman of means, maybe a single woman, maybe not, but a woman of means. It could very well have been that she had contributed regularly to Jesus' ministry so that when she sent him a note and said, "Your dear friend is sick," she expected him in a hurry. And it didn't happen. Either way, John sets this up so that we are disappointed in what Jesus did. Look at six. It says, he stayed where he was for the next 2 days. 2 days. I wonder what the disciples were thinking those 2 days. Jesus, remember that letter we got? Lazarus is sick. Jesus didn't do anything. Nothing's happening. It's interesting because scripture here doesn't say he had to stay there. Because John is the same author that says, when he's talking about the woman at the well, he says Jesus had to go to or through Samaria. And then historians tell us they didn't go through Samaria and they didn't have to go through Samaria. John was saying something important when he wrote that because Jesus had a spiritual appointment in Samaria. He didn't have to go there because that was the way. Jews went out of the way to avoid Samaria. Jesus had to go there. And in this case, it doesn't say that. It just says he stayed where he was. It didn't say that something had come up. It didn't say that he had pressing business somewhere else. It didn't say that something had sidetracked him. None of that. And I intentionally skipped verse 5 because it makes it worse. Verse 5 says, although Jesus loved Martha, Mary, and Lazarus, he stayed 2 more days. It puts us in a weird position here. Why would Jesus do this to a friend, someone he loved? You know what is interesting about this portion of scripture too? The scripture doesn't actually list any other of Jesus' friends. We hear disciples. We hear other people he runs into. These are the only friends ever mentioned in scripture. I'm sure he had other friends. I'm just saying, none of them were mentioned. And these three, it says he loved them. You know, he could have healed them from afar like he did the centurion's servant. You all know that story, right? The centurion comes up, heal my servant. Jesus says, okay, let's go. The centurion says, oh, no, you don't have to go to my house. I'm over 100 men and they're over other men and I give an order and they do what I say. Just say the word and he'll be healed. And Jesus said, well, I haven't seen this kind of faith in all of Israel. He could have done that, but he didn't do that. So what do you do when God doesn't meet your expectations? Because we all do that math, don't we, from time to time? And we figure, okay, I know this sounds really, really sacrilegious, but don't you at some point say, God, you kind of owe me, don't you? I've been to church all these times. I've done all this. So finally, he says to his disciples, let's go back to Judea. But his disciples objected. They said, Rabbi, only a few days ago, the people in Judea were trying to stone you. Are you going there again? So maybe the disciples weren't concerned that Jesus was going to go heal his friend. In fact, they're probably pretty happy because they figured this could get us into a rumble here. We don't want to be going and having to defend you there. Is that why he was disappointing his friends, maybe? Jesus was afraid of what might happen to him in Judea? No, I don't think so. Jesus answers them and he says, there are 12 hours of daylight every day. During the day, people can walk safely. They can see because they have the light of this world, but at night there is danger of stumbling because they have no light. Then he said, our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but now I will go and wake him up. And the disciples, I love how they're always so literal and concrete with him. Jesus is talking spiritual and they're not getting it. I would think after being with Jesus for a minute, maybe a year, maybe two, I don't know. At some point you're going to think, I wonder if he's being spiritual again. I mean, he is Jesus. But instead they say, well, if he's just sleeping, he'll get better. And they thought Jesus meant Lazarus was simply sleeping, but Jesus meant that Lazarus had died. So he told them plainly, Lazarus is dead. And for your sakes, I'm glad I wasn't there, for now you will really believe. Come, let's go see him. And Thomas, nicknamed the twin, said to his fellow disciples, "All right, let's go. Might as well go die with Jesus." I just think, so funny. I just love how they just showed them in their raw just character who they were. I mean, I look at him and I think, what a drama queen. Okay, let's go die. I guess if he's gone, I guess we should all die together. Okay, let's go die. When Jesus arrives at Bethany, he was told Lazarus had already been in his grave for 4 days. This may have been why he waited. And maybe you've never heard this before, but the Jews in that day and time, they had this theory, not biblical, just a theory, but it was very prevalent. We find it in a lot of their writings, that the spirit stayed in the body for 3 days. Now, that sounds weird, doesn't it? And that may have been why Jesus stayed in the grave 3 days, but letting Lazarus go 4 days in the grave guaranteed that there would be no confusion. He was really, really dead. Reminds me of that song in Wizard of Oz. She's really, truly dead. Not just dead, but really, really, really dead. So Jesus waits 4 days. 4 days. What do you do when he disappoints you? You know, I think some people have been sold kind of a touchy-feely unicorns and pixie dust Christianity. And they thought that becoming a Christian meant everything is great from now on. It's like your get-out-of-jail-free card. And I'm not saying that God is not good all the time. He is good. But sometimes Christianity gets preached and sold with a hype that goes with it that makes it sound like if things aren't going right in your life, because they look like everything's perfect and they never have a problem in the world. But real life has problems. So it's difficult sometimes to square that, and it can leave you with some real disappointment. Now, I know you know this story and Lazarus gets raised from the dead. I know that. But right now, he's dead and they're really, really disappointed in God. Because what they expected him to do, he didn't do. What he could have easily done, he didn't do. And there doesn't seem to be a good explanation at all. The one they believed in had failed them. He did it for others, but he didn't do it for them. You've served him. You've changed your life. You sacrificed. He's done it for others, but he hasn't done it for you, and he's disappointed you. Maybe sometimes Christianity just seems too simple the way they preach it sometimes. But it makes me wonder what people got into it for in the first place. I had a class in college, and it was a logic class, and they said, human beings are so funny. They'll buy things if you tell them it just gives you love, joy, and peace. And what we did in the class was they just showed ad after ad after ad, and you watch it, it makes you feel better, and life will be better, and you'll get this girl, and you'll be all handsome, and you put on cologne, and they'll flock to you. I mean, we're so dumb. But we've sold Christianity the same way sometimes. We tell people it'll be just super easy from here on in. And the truth is that life is still life. And it's still tough. And bad things still happen. And if you were serving him just for an easy street life and pain-free and happy all the time, that's not real life. And he never promised that. In fact, he promised you would have problems in this world just like he did. In fact, this is scary. If you're not having problems, you may not be doing Christianity right. Because it's not something that goes over easy with everybody else. At one point, he said he came to bring a sword because it was going to divide people. Because when you tell them what the truth is, people don't want to hear that. And they look at it as politically incorrect or whatever you want to call it, but it's offensive to say Jesus is the only way. It just is. I love talking to people about Christianity and faith and philosophy. I really enjoy it. What I don't enjoy, though, is when people are so close-minded, they won't consider Christianity. But that's what they accuse Christianity of all the time. And I want to try to tell them, but hold on. What you're saying is so closed-minded. I don't know if you can understand it. But the problem is a lot of times people are sold Christianity as if it's supposed to be just so easy. I wrote this, like we'd all sing Kumbaya and walk on cotton balls and drink chocolate and eat steak. I would buy into that, actually. That would be, well, not the cotton balls, but the chocolate and steak part. I've talked to people, I've heard them, you know, they'll say, oh, I've been praying for a new car and God hasn't blessed me with that yet. I don't know why he blessed them, but he's blessing me and it hasn't happened yet. Look at him like, really? Really, is that what he is to you, like a vending machine that you just want super neat stuff? I'm sorry, but I look at the life of the Apostle Paul and his life was really hard. And he walked with God and Christ closer than you or I ever will. And he was beaten and he was stoned and left for dead and he was shipwrecked and he almost died and he went without clothes and without food and he was persecuted and he was badgered all the time and it wasn't great for him. And the very disciples that Jesus traveled with, they each died a horrible death, except for John. We think he died of old age, maybe. Not sure. But before that, he was boiled in oil. And the historians tell us that it bleached his skin, this creepy white. And then he supposedly said he didn't mind because it made his preaching even more effective. Probably because he was freaky looking. I don't know. It's weird, though. People think if they become a Christian, sometimes there's that cause and effect doesn't happen anymore. Or that we're not going to live in a cursed world anymore where there's disease and death and bad things happen. And that there won't be lost humanity and they'll do things that are evil which will have effect on innocent people. Or that we won't live with the consequences of our own actions anymore. Or that once you become a Christ follower, everybody's going to be super nice to you. Oh, you're a Christian now? Oh, great. Well, I'm sorry for everything I ever did wrong to you. I'm sorry. It doesn't work that way. Or all your friends and family will call you up and try to give you money and pay you back and suddenly apologize for everything they did but wrong, and your car will never break down, and you'll get all the closest parking spots because the far spots, those are for sinners, right? Isn't that how we act? There'll never be a conflict at church, and no one will be snotty or petty or do bad things. Or every hunter will get a 10-point buck, and you'll never break a nail, and we'll visit hospitals, but only because the sinners are there, not the Christians. And you'll never need gas in your car. And did you ever know that Jesus was a disappointment? I mean, even when he was born, it was a disappointment. You ever thought about that? I mean, he wasn't born a king. He was born a pauper. He wasn't born in a palace. He was born in a barn. He wasn't born to like an intact leading family. He was born to a virgin, an unmarried virgin. Well, they got married, but born in a hick town. Wasn't a political leader. He healed on the Sabbath. He broke all the religious rules. He wasn't a political leader. He wasn't a military leader. His disciples wanted to be leaders next to a king, and instead, they ended up being disciples of a man who died. He fed 5,000, and then the next day, they came back for another meal, and instead, he said, I'm not going to feed you food like that again. Instead, you need to feed on me. I'm the bread of life. And they all left him because they were disappointed. He was honored on Palm Sunday as a king who was going to overthrow Rome, but then the end of the week, Romans killed him. You see how he even was a disappointment in a lot of ways? I think the problem is we have this plan, and we kind of need to figure out whose plan am I working here? Because my plan, I try to tell him all the time, I got a good plan here, God. You need to get on board. I got this figured out. I know how it'll work best. You need to get with me. I get it all backwards. Because in this story, Jesus did have a plan. He had a plan. And I'm sorry if this is harsh tonight. I'm sorry, but just some of this just kills me sometimes because I look at it and I think, you know what? When I look at me and my life, I disappoint him. It's not me, him disappointing me. What do I deserve from him? I mean, really? I'm the disappointment. It's weird. We start to expect certain things or feel like we're entitled to certain things. And the truth is, what we really deserve, we do not want. You are so lucky that you don't get what you deserve. I mean, that's grace. If we got what we deserved, we'd all be dead. I mean, we don't get it. By grace, we've already been brought into relationship with him. By grace, we don't get what we deserve. By grace, what you expected to get, you might even get. And by grace, we've been given what we never could deserve. His goal really isn't to make you necessarily like happy and unicorns and cotton balls and chocolate and steak on this earth. It's really to have a relationship with you. And we walk this earth and we do make it better and we can take more people along with us, but it's not about pleasure and pain-free. I mean, I hope we get that and it comes along the way. And it's amazing how you can have joy in the midst of sorrow and struggle. And if you have never been on a missions trip, I encourage it because it'll open your eyes to that. And I know I told you this before, but I remember the first time I took a bunch of students to Mexico. We had this old crotchety missionary, American missionary, took us down there, and he was so mean. And he kept telling me all the time, these kids, they shouldn't even be here. They're a horrible example of Christianity. I'm saying, well, that's why they're here. They're trying to grow and learn and become better Christians. And you know, part of what we would do is we go and work, and he'd say, you're doing a horrible job. These people deserve better. I'm like, these are high school kids. Give them a break. Lighten up, you know. And I mean, I felt like I was arguing with him the whole time, you know. And I remember that we were doing these evening services, and he was translating. Well, before we even got to the sermon part, the kids were doing testimonies. And I knew enough Spanish to know he wasn't translating their testimonies right. I kept thinking, that's not what they said. And afterward, I kind of confronted him. I thought I had something, you know, to get him back, you know. I said, why didn't you translate their testimonies right? And he goes, are you kidding me? You really wanted me to stand up there and tell these poor people who live with nothing what these kids are saying, these spoiled, rotten kids. And he goes, you heard what they said. And then it hit me like a brick. And I thought, oh, I'm an idiot. Now I'm in the middle of this. And he's right. Because they were saying things like, man, I come down here and I see how happy you are and you don't have anything and I feel so guilty because, I mean, they were admitting their selfishness, but that's not what you wanted to tell these poor people sitting there. And these kids' whole worldview was turned upside down because they realized how blessed they were, and what they kept saying is, I can't believe how content and happy they are and they don't have anything. And we used that as an opportunity to talk to them and think, well, what did you think life was about? Yeah, they're full of joy. They know Christ and they're excited about it and they're raising their families. And what do you really need anyway? Oh, man. It's by grace we can breathe deep and look forward to heaven and think about what there is in life. As it turns out, Bethany was really close to Jerusalem, just a couple miles away. And many of the people who had come to console Mary and Martha in their loss, and in these cultures, it's really common, and maybe you've seen this happen too, where there's a lot of wailing and mourning, and you do that to support the family. They even had paid professional mourners in this culture, and it doesn't list that them here, but in another portion of Scripture, it talks about that. I mean, it was a big show. It was a huge ordeal. So as Jesus gets close there, Martha got word that Jesus was coming, and she went to meet him, but Mary stayed back in the house. Kind of a reversal from last time, right? Martha was working in the house, but now she comes out to meet Jesus, and it's awesome because you can see her personality in all this. She says, I imagine her hands on her hip, I'm sure. Maybe both hands are up like this. Maybe, you know, a good Jewish woman, she's like, what? She's probably saying, Lord, if only you had been here, my brother would not have died. I laugh. I read that and I laugh kind of because I'm thinking what she's really saying is, glad you can make it. A day ago would have been nice. You were on time for dinner the other day, but you couldn't make it for my brother. What, you didn't get the message? Or just what didn't matter? I mean, she didn't go into all that maybe. I don't know. But she says, but even now, I know that God will give you whatever you ask. Jesus tells her, your brother will rise again. And Martha says, yes, he will rise when everyone else rises at the last day. She's kind of stuck on the past. And you can't blame her because she doesn't know the whole Bible like we do. She hasn't read the whole thing. She doesn't know the end of the story. All she knows is he's dead 4 days. Yeah, I've seen you heal other people. I've seen you walk on water. I mean, Jesus at this point had fed the 5,000. He walked on water, healed a bunch of people, lots of people, calmed storms. She probably knew about all that, but he hadn't raised someone dead 4 days. So in her mind, she's focused on the past and what had happened and what God couldn't do and her disappointment, her deep disappointment that they were good friends with Jesus and he couldn't even get there in time. And he let her down. He failed her. She was living in the past of her disappointment. For you, maybe it could be something else. Maybe your dad left. Maybe your parents divorced. Maybe you lost a job or lost a house or lost your health. Or because you lost a job, you lost your house. Or if God would have done this for you, then I would have done this for him. Or you just expected more of him. Or maybe when you were vulnerable, people took advantage of you. Or my sister died. My kids never got to know her. She's talking about the past, and Jesus is talking about now. And she can't hear the now because she's stuck in the past. In fact, what's really sad is not only is she stuck in the past, but the only hope she has is something way out in the future that she can't even touch yet. You know, this overwhelms me to read this and think, the king of the universe is standing right in front of her. I mean, within her reach. And she doesn't realize it. Every hope that she could ever have is right there. The thing is, we can't change the past. We can't control the future. We don't have any control over those things, but that's where she's kind of stuck. But I think it's kind of cool because even in her grief, she stumbles onto this. I'm going to go back. See that last sentence? But even now, I know that God will give you whatever you ask. I don't even know if she knew what she said when she said that. But I want to camp on that for the next few minutes. Even now. Even now. Have you ever gone to a sporting event and left a little early because you wanted to beat the traffic and your team was losing anyway? Then they had a big comeback. Has that ever happened to you? That's happened to me one time in my life, and it's one of those things you're like, I can't believe it. And you can't get it back, but you didn't realize it was that close to victory, and it was coming, but you didn't know. And you turn the radio on in the parking lot as you're driving out, and you're like, oh my gosh, I just missed the comeback. Sometimes you live in the past so much that you can't look to the now, and you don't see what God's trying to do right now. And he's got a comeback plan, but you can't see it because it wasn't what you expected. Lazarus did die, and that was not what they expected, but that wasn't the end of the game, and it wasn't over for them. That wasn't the end of it. It wasn't it. Let me stretch it even a little further and look at this. My expectation is not built on something. I said build. My expectation is not built on something. It's built on someone. Did you catch that? Because that will take you through anything in life. I don't care what it is. I don't care if it's hard times. I don't care if it's hard financial times, physical times. Because my life isn't that. It's not those things. It's him. The thing you wanted didn't happen, but Jesus is still here. The person you hoped in to come through for you didn't, but he's still here. Other people's decisions have crushed your dreams, but he's still here. I read this line and it was really well written. It says, a lot of people let their expectations die, hung between two thieves called regrets of their past and uncertainty of their future. And Jesus is present right in the middle of them. And they can't see it because all they're focused on is those two things. I want to challenge you tonight to not let your expectations die a premature death. Don't leave the stadium while the clock is still ticking. Don't give up on him. As angry as Martha was, she still believed in him. And she could have just said, you could have been here, I'm done with you. She could have done that. She didn't. Jesus goes on and he says to her, I am the resurrection and the life. Anyone who believes in me will live even after dying. Everyone who lives in me and believes in me will never die. Do you believe this, Martha? He's talking about the long-term view. We're so caught in the present, and that's normal. We live in the present. I get it. But he's thinking way beyond that. She says, "Yes, Lord, I've always believed you are the Messiah, the Son of God, the one who has come into the world from God." She believed. Didn't shake her belief. None of that changed. I want to shake you up with something again. Another one. The first one is sometimes you need to change your expectation from a thing to a person. I wonder if sometimes he might need to disappoint your expectations to exceed them. They wanted him to just be healed, which would have been cool. But he'd done that before. They weren't thinking about him being raised from the dead. They had a plan that involved really, you know, God healing, which was awesome. But what he had in mind was awesomer. Do you see what I'm saying? The thing is, for us as humans, we're so limited in our ideas and our solutions. And a lot of times we get so stuck in our plans. And a lot of times it's not even flashy stuff. I mean, God's what he's trying to accomplish in you may not be like, I'm not saying stuff like you wanted a VW and he's trying to give you a Cadillac. I'm not talking like that. I'm talking like he cares more about your character. And what if he's trying to work in you a work of patience, which nobody wants? Nobody wants patience. I mean, really. What does he have to do to you to give you patience? I don't want that. I don't want to walk that road. I've always told him, I don't want patience. It's not very flashy, is it? It doesn't come with a ribbon. But it's a work that he wants to do in you because he cares more about you and your character than you do. What if he needs to grow some humility in you? What would that even look like? But on the other hand, what if you have a dream that you think God has called you to, and you watch that dream die, and you say to God, "How could you? You gave me that dream." And he wanted to give you a bigger dream. I mean, he could do that, right? And no matter how big of a thing you've thought of, his things are bigger. I'm not saying necessarily he's going to give you a better job with more pay. And you can look on the internet and there's a lot of things that say that, you know, God closes a door but opens a window, and all that's awesome. And I believe God does that. I believe in Romans 8:28, where he takes horrible situations and makes them good. He's done that in my life over and over and over. So I'm not saying that's not true. What I'm saying is sometimes you need to open your mind to what his expectations are, because they are better. But a lot of times we think better means more expensive or more flashy or a bigger title. And that's not what he's always concerned about. Remember I mentioned Paul a minute ago? Paul the apostle that wrote more books in the New Testament than anybody else. He wrote this in the book of Philippians. He says, "I want to know Christ and experience the mighty power that raised him from the dead. I want to suffer with him, sharing in his death, so that one way or another, I will experience the resurrection from the dead." I read that and I think, man, Paul, you went through a lot and you want more. You know why? Because what he wanted was God. He wanted a relationship with Christ more than anything else. That was worth more to him than anything materially. That was worth more to him than any title. You notice he never cared about being in charge of the church or the Pope or heading a council. He never did any of that. And yet he planted more churches and is probably singularly responsible for more people coming to Christ than any of the other 12 disciples. One guy. Because his heart and his goal was a relationship with Christ beyond all that. When your expectations isn't for something, but to know someone, then you can stare in the face of uncertainty all day long. Now, you're going to be disappointed in life. And there's going to be times where you're going to come and you're going to say, "God, what is going on?" And you may be saying that tonight. I know there's people in here saying that tonight because we talked about it already. I know that. But let me tell you something. Your expectations will never, ever define what he does and who he is. He's got more for you than you expect. Now, when I say more, again, may be different than the more you're thinking, but it's better. It's better. You know the rest of the story probably, but just to fill you in, Jesus sees Mary. Mary says, "Lord, if you'd only been here." Everybody's crying. And shortest verse in the Bible, 11:35, Jesus wept, it says. Jesus weeps. People says, "Oh, look how much sad he was and how much he cared." And then other people say, "Well, he could have saved him." He says, "Roll away the stone." And Martha says, I love the King James here. It says, "Oh, no, Lord, surely he stinketh." I mean, he's been dead 4 days. That's Martha. Remember, she's the one he had just had the conversation with, resurrection and the life. Okay, she still didn't get it, but anyway. "Didn't I tell you you'd see the glory of God if you believe?" And so this is the only time in Scripture, too, where you get this little commentary here. It says he prays out loud so that they would believe and see that he has this relationship with God. And he prays out loud and says, "Lazarus," again, the King James, "come forth." Just sounds more impressive than "come out." And Lazarus comes out. So David, if you could put some music on, and I want to challenge you for just a moment here. I want you to shut your eyes for a second, and I just want to ask you some questions based on what we've talked about tonight. Where is your expectation? Is it in a thing or in a person? Because I promise you, if your expectations and trust and security is in money, that'll fail. And people, even the best of people, are going to make mistakes and fail. But Christ will never fail. He will never fail you. Is Jesus able? Yes. Can he pull you out of whatever hole or ditch you put yourself in? Yes. Yes, and he does. But the more important thing is, will you have him in the end? Will you have him? Have you been disappointed? Then tell him about it. Take a few minutes here tonight, and what I want you to do is just go to him. Go to him like Mary and Martha, if you need to, and say, "Hey, I thought we were friends. I expected this from you." Just say it out loud or say it in prayer and quiet, and just say it. Get it out in the open. Talk about it. Tell him, "God, I wanted this." And then be open to way maybe something else God is trying to work in you. And again, I'm not saying he won't give you the job and give you the car or whatever. What I'm saying is make sure you get him in the middle of that, because that's more important than any of the rest of those things. So let's just take a few minutes. And I invite you, why don't we all stand? Let's just stand for a minute. I'm not going to do a closing prayer other than right now. I want to close right now with you in prayer. And then I'm going to invite you, if you want to pray alone where you are, find a place. If you like to walk around and pray, whatever suits you. But I just want you to spend some time and talk to him. Father, we've been disappointed. God, I've been disappointed a lot of times. There's things I thought you would do. I even tried it.